Welcome to another episode of Cosmic Echo, a Tay Leader podcast. This podcast applies a scientific viewpoint on the strange and bizarre phenomenon that happens in our lives when we sleep and in altered states. In this episode, we complete our talk with Peter Gorman about his book, Ayahuasca in My Blood, 25 Years of Medicine Dreaming, which concerns his long-standing relationship with the Amazonian visionary medicine ayahuasca. Award-winning investigative journalist Peter Gorman has spent more than 25 years tracking down stories from the streets of Manhattan to the slums of Bombay to the jungles of Peru. Specializing in drug war issues, he has worked for High Times magazine for 14 years, during which he was senior editor, executive editor, and editor-in-chief. He was credited as the primary journalist in the medical marijuana movement. If you enjoyed this episode of Cosmic Echo and would like to learn more about Peter Gorman and his work, you can visit our website at tayleaders.com/CE podcast, and there you can click on links that will take you to his books as well as his other works. Additionally, if you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so through our Patreon page, which is located at the same website. Well, without further ado, let's get to the interview.
So how does one particularly learn or specialize in a particular, system? I mean, do you take the ayahuasca and then ask to be, shown aspects of that particular, like the red magic? Or, I mean, how does that work?
I don't know. It's a very different world now if you're thinking of drinking ayahuasca than it was in 1984 in terms of the internet, in terms of the books being written. You know, there were a couple of books out then, but they were more academic, like Dobkin DeRio's material, okay, about, recording her father-in-law's patients, how many patients come into his clinic every day. And traditionally, of course, you wouldn't drink. The patient doesn't drink ayahuasca. Only the doctor does. On rare occasions, twice in her life, my mother-in-law three times in her life drank ayahuasca, and my father-in-law too, but they still attended ceremonies most Tuesday and Friday nights. But they didn't drink, the curandero drinks. And the reason for that is this. In Peru, in northwest Amazonia, it includes part of Ecuador and western Brazil, and in Bolivia, this illness and bad luck, negativity, are all seen as symptoms of a disturbance on some other level. The curandero traditionally accesses that other level in this part of the world with ayahuasca. In other parts, it would be with San Pedro or among northern Mexicans, and now Plains Indians, peyote, etc. But the curandero accesses there, sees what's wrong with you, goes to his friends to find out what he can do to fix it, and then comes back and says, here's your problem, here's what you need to do to fix it, now go away, handle your problem. It's a new deal. Now, my mother-in-law still drank it. In other words, maybe as coming of age, my wife drank it when she was, within among her few first menstruations. Her mom had her drink some, so that she would be able to see who's a good man, see who's a bad man, see if she's going to make a baby with or not make a baby with,
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to give her a little extra insight. And she's only a couple of generations out of, climbing trees for coconuts, so in her world, that was pretty standard, I think. And I've spoken to other people who are my mother-in-law's age, and they're also just two generations away from a real tribal life. And when the rubber boom came in and, tore up the tribal life, for the last, really tore it up, people like my mother-in-law were just kids, Well, her mother was just a kid, not my mother-in-law, but her mother was just a kid, at that time. So, but it's gringos like me go down there, and not knowing that I'm not supposed to drink it, I go ahead and drink. And then Dennis McKenna drinks, and, Terrence drinks, and, people start writing about it, and then everybody... So now, it's really a brave new world of gringos going down there. And these days, it's, hundreds and hundreds per week, and then ceremonies all over the world on any given week. Where gringos are drinking it. So I don't know how... I'm not in those circles and I'm not in those camps. So I don't know what the people are really going in. Like, for my people, I tell them, whatever you do, please don't find anything out about ayahuasca. Do not look for ayahuasca. Don't look it up on the web.
Okay.
You know, before you come and drink with me. Because everything you know, I'm going to have to eliminate from your head. So, you know, before I let you drink. So, you know, it just makes my job harder if you know for sure. Well, then this happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I used to get a great kick out of telling clients, you know, I'd hear somebody say, well, you know what's going to happen. And then this is, and I would just come over and say, you know, the funny thing is, who really didn't read that book? So it's probably not going to happen that way. You know, a couple of them were really offended because they went down there like, I know more. And they didn't know anything. You couldn't know anything until you're in the middle of it. And the middle of it for one guy is sitting there saying, nothing happened, nothing happened. Where tons happened. He just didn't get the Coney Island steeplechase attractions. He didn't get the Christmas tree lights. Didn't mean nothing happened. Sometimes the people who get the Christmas tree lights go away, and it's wonderful. They've now got this sense of awe at the size of the universe. That may not nearly be as important in the end as somebody else who comes to terms with why his marriage is falling apart. And my best example of that, simplest one, I apologize because it's also in the book, but I wasn't going to save the best examples from the book. I had this great, big, very successful guy come from Hawaii with his gorgeous, very successful wife. I mean, they were just, you know, bodybuilders, and they'd been in Fortune magazine, and, you know, so they were making like a second career for themselves as moneyed people, right?
Okay.
And, They were sweet. They were really nice. And the wife had these amazing experiences. Two nights she drank. And he drank three or four nights and didn't do anything except just shit himself uncontrollably. I had to wipe this huge, enormous bodybuilder butt myself because nobody else was going near it. And he was... incapacitated physically, and you know, he was just a gross thing to be around. And but that's your job if you're going to take people out, you know, handle it. And but he had nothing in the way of visions. Three or four different times he drank, nothing. And his wife kept having these spectacular visions, and he kept being a little bit upset. 6 months after we get back, maybe 8 months after we get back, I get a little note out of the blue. He has not been in touch since then, and he writes, Pete, first off, I don't know how the fuck you got my big fat ass in one of those dugout canoes. I'm still scared thinking about it. Second, thanks for wiping my butt. That was gross, but it was cool. Third, every day before the trip, I'd wake up and wonder, is this the day I should put the gun in my mouth?
Oh, God.
And call it quits. Every day since the trip, I wake up saying, wow, what a great day to be alive. So here's a guy who went away swearing he got nothing. He had a great time on the trip, right? But he just didn't get anything from the ayahuasca experience. He did. He got a whole life turnaround. A whole life turnaround. Is this the day to end it all? To what a great day to be alive. That's, you know, some of the clearest example of great healing. And he's still alive. And he and his wife have made a couple of babies, and they're in touch now and then. They are having the greatest time in the world. So, you know, what brought that up? So, you know, but if you came down, okay, but your original question is, you know, how do you go about studying it? My answer would be, I don't know. I think you go in with an open mind, or at least I encourage my guests, just go in, whatever happens, happens. And so some people end up in a place that if they later decide to talk to me about it, I would understand as that's part of a green magic stream, you know, because of the events that they went through. Others, you know, are happy just really to see all the bright colors and all the wonderment of the whole darn thing, which is kind of a sprinkling of all of them, the magics, you know. And I think if you need the healing and you begin to get the healing, or not what I did, however you would be able to, you know, compartmentalize it, then you at some point might realize, oh my God, I've been given gifts here. You know, sometimes you're given gifts that are real clear, and sometimes it takes 5 years later that you go like, oh my goodness, I could handle a situation. And you don't even know how you know you can handle a situation. You only know that you can. And then you realize there's a song in the back of your head, maybe. Maybe there's an Icaro. Maybe there's, which can be the simplest songs, but are songs that, you know, call on your own intent and bring up your own, your own, the best of you, let's put it that way, so that they seem to have some power. Maybe you've been shown, you know, when my son Marco was deathly ill and I went to Julio to see if Julio could help him. Julio, when I said, can you sing for Marco in the middle of a ceremony, he said, no, you sing for Marco. You know, I mean, so it was like, but I don't sing. And he laughed, and sure enough, the song came out. And then, you know, the events began happening, and I had to kind of find my son in this dark maze of caves that, the way I saw it, was like inside of a huge snake. And I realized, wait a minute, you know, at one point, lights came out of my fingers. Maybe those lights can help light the way to find my son, Marco. I mean, Marco was in intensive care, dying in Lima while I was up here. I mean, he'd stabilized enough that the doctor said I was such a pain in the ass, I had to get out of Lima. He didn't want to work on my son if I was going to hover on him every minute. And my wife said the same thing. Get out of here. You've been here 3 weeks. Get out. We can't take you anymore. So I decided, let's go see Julio. And, you know, it was in meeting Julio saying, I can't work on him, you work on him, that I suddenly, in desperation, like, how can I do this? What are they even talking about? Realized certain things over the years that had come up, like the song, like, you know, these beautiful, fine, white lights, like, shooting out of my hands, like Spider-Man's goop. These were utilizable tools. I had been given tools. I just didn't recognize that I'd been given tools. And I think these days, somebody going in, if they read my book, if they read Byers' book, and, you know, other books, I don't mean to not include the names of every book ever written, but if they've read those books, they might go in with more of a sense of, I'll recognize a gift if I get one, rather than me, where it was just like, well, that was, wow, what a night that was. And I didn't realize that during the night, what they had shown me at one point would turn out to be something I was allowed to later utilize. They were giving me permission to utilize that.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences with kind of the red space and moving negative energy towards that area? Kind of that the negative energy needed a place to go.
Well, go back to the beginning, you know, years and years ago, after I drank ayahuasca, but early on, I was working at High Times magazine, and I was fascinated with Peyote. And, you know, forces to be came in, and they put this guy in front of me who was a half Indian who had access, who was permitted to go to some Native American Peyote ceremonies. Well, it took about a year of being in touch with this particular group, Bertha Grove and her brother and son, and Southern Utes. And about a year after I began communicating with them, Bertha, you know, we were on the phone one day. She said, "Well, why don't you come down finally? I think you could come down. Just stay out of the way and do what I show you to do." So I went down to do a ceremony. And it was an all-night ceremony, and they're very good, but they're very tiring because they really are all night. And in the morning, when it's time for everybody to say thank you for being alive, they begin thanking every animal they own. and thanking the star and the sky. And after that person's done, the next person happens to have 38 horses and 14 cats, and we have to thank all, you know, like, can we just get out of here? Ceremony ended at 5 a.m. It's 11:30. Please stop thanking everything. Fortunately, there's always a couple of guys in there who are big and hungry, and it'll come to them, and they'll say, I think we did enough thanking. Thanks God for everything. Yeah, let's get out of here. So that saves the day. But I had done three or four of those. And then I asked permission to bring my sister and my brother-in-law and a friend of mine to one of them. And they said, yeah, this is going to be, it's a bad, very cold time of the year. We're not going to have very many people, so we'll have room. So my sister happened to be, she's the girl who designed the MTV logo.
Oh, wow.
So she was, you know, super, super top. She was always Sting's personal designer for albums and Billy Idol's designer and stuff. So, I mean, she was absolute top of her game in the rock and roll world. And then she decided to become an acupuncturist. So she cut down the design to just a few clients and went to acupuncture school. And during the ceremony that she was at with Bertha, near the end of the ceremony was being held for a boy who was very ill. Didn't look ill, but was going to die of something, you know, with his head. And near the end of the ceremony, before we began thanking the universe, Bertha went ahead and sucked out, as I've seen done a lot of times, but this time in particular, it was a long 20 minutes of sucking something out of this boy's head. And she called me aside when it was time for the feast in the morning, and she said, get your sister over here. Okay. I brought my sister, and she said, did you see what I did? And we said, yeah. She said, no, did you see what I did? I said, well, it looked like you sucked out his sickness. And he said, yeah, but did you see, I didn't swallow that. I said, here's the thing. With sickness, that's negative energy. That's got the same will to live as every other thing. It doesn't want to die. It doesn't know that it's not a good, positive thing. And so if I suck that sickness out and spin it on the ground, that energy stays right there until somebody comes close enough to it that it can jump on them. And in one case, it might have killed that boy if I hadn't gotten it out. It might jump on somebody else and become a terrible cold. When that person finally gets rid of that energy, it might become pneumonia to somebody else or cancer to somebody else. But it's going to stay alive. And it will transmogrify it. She wouldn't use a word like that, but it will, you know, transmogrify itself into whatever it needs to be to stay alive. She said, so when I pull that sickness out of that boy, she said, I wrap that up in gauze that you can't see, and I send that off to a far-off planet that's cold, 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 that never, ever in all future time is ever going to be used by anything else. Nobody's going to get hurt by that medicine, by that, you know, negative energy. Said so, and all of us Indians, we all have our own place to put that stuff, but we can't leave it lying around. And then she looked at my sister and said, now you, I saw last night in ceremony, you're a healer. She didn't know anything about acupuncture. I mean, it hadn't come up. And she said, you're a healer. The problem I saw is that you have everyone's illnesses on you. You don't know how to get rid of them. So it's like you're swallowing them. But they're all living off you. And if you don't learn to get rid of them soon, you're going to be deathly ill or die from them. Well, my sister, who adores me, is my big sister. And because I'm the little brother, everything I do or am associated with is a little bit, like to her friends, it's fantastic, but to her, it's a little beneath her. So she ignored Bertha. 6 months later, came down sick and has been sick and crippled up for the last 30 years.
Wow.
Just like Bertha said would happen. And she's got everything under the sun. She's got diseases she can't possibly have as a white Irish girl. You know, Chinese seeping stomach and, you know, Native American disorders that, you know, Irish kids just don't get. But she had sucked all this shit out of people with her acupuncture and didn't know to get rid of it. So, so when it comes to the Red Room, I had never, whenever I thought I saw negative energy, or some would say, can you get this off me? And I would, you just close your eyes and pretend and try to see it. You know what I mean? And if you think you see it, you try to get it off them. And I would do what Bertha did, and I would take it, and I would try to imagine a real impenetrable kind of gauze, and then I imagine that this is going to this far-off place. And with a lot of things, it takes a lot of faith, just plain old faith, like that you actually did get the negative energy off, that it is something, and you were able to wrap it up and get it somewhere. You just, and then one night during ceremony, in the middle of that red magic stuff, my son Idlo was drinking with me, and he had called me over to help him, like Markla had done maybe a year earlier, 6 months earlier, and I was holding him, thank God, because I really needed to be held. You know, forget it, I'm glad he called me over. And then at some point, I just went through the floor, and I fell forever and ever, and I knew I was just going to die, I was just going to crash, and my physical body was just dead. I knew I had physically gone through the floor, and I floped on this, like, goopy stuff and didn't die. You know, my body actually hadn't gone anywhere, but I was sure it had, and that it was an exceptional difference than normal. Instead, I flipped on the stand. It was the most horrible, reeking, ugh. I'd never smelled anything like that. I'd never seen anything like that. Heard. It was all agony. It was horrible. It was lies. It was pain. It was people who've been cheated and cheated on. And, you know, it was all their ick, their pain. And as far as I could see, it was like this, again, pardon me, compartmentalizing. It was as if I compartmentalized this into a cavern, is what it looked like to me, with a very light, you know, red glow, like a black light, except red light level of glow, so you could barely see. All I could see was this heaps of stuff, and then vomiting, and when people would vomit or scream, those screams would send stuff raining down into this cavern. And those doctors, the same doctors that were working on me, or more of them, thousands, tens of thousands, were in there, and they were collecting all this stuff, and they were just kind of twisting it around. And so that it went from being this horrible, stinky, stench stuff into this most amazing, luminous stuff that they were then sending back up through the roof. And so that's how I was introduced to that. And interestingly enough, because it's not supposed to be able to happen, I was in there, and then Italo stopped. Dad, what is this place? Why is it red? Who are those people? What's the smell in here? So, yeah, that to me, that was my introduction to a red room. Now, how do you use that red room? You know, none of this stuff is any good if you can't use it. If you need the ayahuasca to have the ayahuasca insight, to me, there's no point to it, okay? Other than, you know, fantastic to do it while you're doing it. But if once you know the world is bigger than you, you've got to be able to operate in that bigger world. You have to be able to utilize that in your daily life, to me, you know, to kind of validate the importance. Otherwise, what's the importance, mm-hmm. You know? We know the importance of beauty. Why do you have plants in your yard, flowers and trees, if you can? You know, if you've got a yard to have them in, or why do you go to parks that have them if you live in an apartment and don't have them? You go there because you know that beauty refreshes you. And somehow, even in your darkest moment, you know there's parks out there with these beautiful flowers in them, or that it's tulip time, or that, you know, whatever it might be. And so there's a part of you that is helped to function just with the knowledge of what's out there, for instance, in that green mask, in those tulips, in those trees, for instance. I mean, that just brightens people's spirits all the time, even when they're not out in it. Guys in jail talk about dreaming about getting out to get real grass under their, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Getting mud on their hands, stepping into a real pond and not just some damn shower. So it's very powerful. In the same way, I want ayahuasca to be powerful for people here in Texas, in New York, when they come back from Peru. You know, the healing doesn't just happen there. And people question me on that often with a, well, you know, so you need the ayahuasca to get high, to get to those other spaces. And I really think I'm not wrong when I answer no. What you need are the chemicals in ayahuasca to trigger the receptor sites, invisible receptor sites you already have. Once those receptor sites are triggered once or twice, you no longer need the ayahuasca to get into those spaces. You really don't. That's why sometimes I privately chuckle, although I publicly these people may need it, but I privately chuckle of people who are, you know, well, I've done it 800 times, I've done it 1,000, you know, it's like, Well, why would you need to? I mean, that's saying, again, there's nothing wrong with you doing that, but if they only knew that, that's fine to do it 800 times or 1,000 times, but you didn't need to. You could have stopped at 6, 12, 30, 50, 100, I don't know when you could have stopped, you know what I mean? But it's still available. My daughter has just put a note on my desk which says, as the queen, I declare that you go buy king-size chocolate ice cream cones for breakfast. I'm sorry for that interruption. But you have to be able to utilize it here. You know, does that mean everybody in the world is going to be a healer because they do ayahuasca? No, not at all. But it does mean that you have to be able to learn lessons, for instance, with negative energy. You've got to be able, if you've seen the negative energy on somebody, even once, you should be able to see it on everybody. And then you can do your best to kind of scoop it off if you can, or mentally scoop it off and put it someplace, like the Red Room. And in my case, the Red Room is wherever I happen to need it, you know, because it's everywhere. So just open the door and say, hello, docs, can I give you some of this junk? And they laugh, and, you know, I give them the junk, and hopefully that makes life a little better for somebody who is in a bad mood. Even if it's a stranger I just passed in the supermarket, you know, mentally let's pull that junk off. I've got invisible fingers. I could do that. I don't need to sit them down or say, I need to get you to Peru to a healer. He can do it. No, I could do that. You could do that. We all can do that. Not all of us know we can do that. And some of us think I'm nuts for even saying we can all, but of course we can all do that. And so that to me is one way to make ayahuasca work here in this world. Heal people. Mostly the healing is, you know, fix that disturbance. Take a moment. Look at that person. Try to see. Get up to that next level. Get to see where their disturbance is that's causing them this anger or this sickness here. Try to find a solution. And, in a split second, because in that other world, there is no time as we know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and there's no physical constraints of a human body. So, you know, in one human second, you can get somewhere, root around for a couple of years, find a, you know, solution to something, see if it's the right one, come back, and then try to apply it, and the person is still standing next to you on the grocery line, you know? And they don't know it, but they just were zinged. And, you know, you can't say it if you started walking around saying, hey, I'm zinging these people, I'm making them cool. Then you wouldn't be able to do it anymore. You know, that's not the point. The point is, you know, you were shown this for a reason. Use it. And in using it, you get stronger, and it's incidental, but I mean, in using it, I don't know, it's good. It's a good thing. I mean, I've got friends coming in this week. They just want to be around my kids. Because they say my kids have a kind of magic that whenever they're around my kids, like people have been on trips with me to Peru, say, I don't know why, but I have this chronic condition, and as soon as I'm around your daughter, Madalena, I don't have it.
Oh, wow.
So can I come to your house and just hang out with you for a week before Christmas? Because I really belong in a hospital now. And I'm not kidding. I've got somebody coming in for that this week. She wants healing. Well, there's nothing I'm going to be able to do with healing. No, the healing will be, let her be around my Madalena. the girl who just demands that I buy ice cream. But that works for this particular person. Somebody else is coming in Wednesday. Two people were here last week, 2 weeks ago for a week. This is that world. And the changes they come back with from, from a trip to Peru or from a couple of trips, are such they don't even fit in their own world anymore. They're like, how do I explain this to people? All my friends think I'm insane.
Yeah.
Can we come to your house so I don't feel so insane? And they, sure, come on in my house. Let's talk about it. I got plenty of room. We'll get some, air mattresses we'll put up. And they can get a little more grounded with, how is it possible? There was going to be a car accident, and I willed the other car to brake better than it was braking. And it did. Did I do that? Can I do that? The answer is, yeah, you probably did that. You just, everybody could do that. When I was a kid, I really begged for superpowers. You know what I mean? I mean, I begged because I was a sick kid. I was in the hospital 6 months, rheumatoid arthritis and cortisone. So I blew up to 170 pounds as a 7-year-old. And when I went to school, all the kids raced backwards against me for about 2 years. It was very embarrassing. So I prayed for a superpower. Let me just be the Flash, man. I don't have to have all of Superman's powers, just one, make up for me having been sick. That stunk. And, I never got him. And then it turns out as an adult, you not only got him, you had him the whole time. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Oh. So, some ayahuasca just shows me, and then I realize I could have done this the whole time. Yeah. But you didn't see how big the world was, so you didn't see that you had that juice. But you got the juice. We all do. It's not from outside us. It's just, but if you don't know it, how are you going to use it? And it doesn't mean you can walk around saying, I'm going to stop car wrecks today. I'm going to, nobody's going to get hurt today. No one's going to die today. The world's going on with or without you. But you can have a little more influence than you might think you can have. And I think that's a very good side benefit of that medicine, that she lets you understand that.
Well, Instigator One, you have any extra questions that you wanted to get in here, man?
No, man. We could talk all day. So, okay.
Yeah, are so great. Thank you so much for coming on here and doing this with us.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, thanks for listening. I hope it was all right. All right,
No, it was great.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Is there anywhere that you that you would prefer for folks to get your book from, what can we do to help you promote your book?
Cool. The book, Ayahuasca in My Blood, 25 Years of Medicine Dreaming, published by Gorman Bench Press. Me, because it was like a bench press to get that load off my chest. Fine, yes, 25 years. And it's doing pretty good. And most people, you can order it right through your own bookstore. And what they'll do is, there are probably 15 or 20 bookstores that order 5 or 10 copies a month from me around, the country and Canada. But usually those bookstores will just go right to Amazon.com and order and have it sent to you from there. If you want your own bookstore to get a cut, then they'll pay considerably less as a bookstore, even though it'll cost you, the same price. So, but your bookstore, your concrete bookstore can then stay in business, which is nice because bookstores are nice. But you can go to my blog, pgorman.com, and not my blog, my regular, my website, and, you can order the book there. You can even find out about trips there. You can even find out that, I've got some wonderful interviews with crazy people like Ken Kesey and Allen Ginsberg and Richard Schultes, and you can see, read some, if you go to pgorman.com, it's a good place to start. There's a blog that I write on continually that I think is fairly hilarious most of the time, dealing with family issues and family stuff, but also deals a lot with people. Strangers will get in touch with me and say, I have this question about ayahuasca. and I'll mull it over for a couple of days, and I'll try to come up with an answer. And if it's a decent answer or a question that I think a lot of people might have, I'll often then put those answers on the blog, you know, as well as send them to the people who asked the question. So I think the blog is you know, kind of a fun place for some stuff that, you know, there really isn't room for in the book. You know, the book's got a, in my book, I wanted to tell a story, or several stories, but, you know, several threads of the same skein. And whereas these questions would have, you know, I love it when people write me and ask me questions. And that's, so the blog is one place they go up. So to promote the book, by all means, go to your local bookstore, ask them to order it for you, and they'll have it for you in 48 hours probably. And or, you know, if you're somebody who's not near a bookstore, Amazon.com is a good place to find it.
All right. Is there anything else that you'd like people to know before we let you go?
Yeah. And, you know, I take people down. I usually screen them pretty good. I want the right people. But I take people down to Peru in January, February, and June and July. June and July, I include my daughter. She comes down as non-parole assistant, just a wonderful assistant. But, again, if you just go to thepetegorman.com, you'll see what it is we do. And now, those trips, I think, are very good. They do include medicine. They include the Montez medicines, Sapo and Nunu. They also include a real good dose of this is what the jungle is. How would you like to see real deep jungle as it is, not as you've read about it? And I think they're extraordinary trips that change people's lives. And the medicine is part of that. You know, this is it. If any more, I'm going to have to flagellate myself after I'm gone, after I'm off the phone, because I'm not supposed to say so many things to promote myself.
Whatever.
I was raised a Catholic kid, you know. You start to feel guilty after a minute.
Well, we really appreciated talking with you. Thank you so much for the...
Thank you very much. And yeah, thanks very much for the opportunity to...
If you enjoyed this episode of Cosmic Echo and would like to learn more about Peter Gorman and his work, please visit our website at taileaters.com/CE podcast, and there you can click on links that will take you to his work as well as his books. Additionally, if you'd like to support this podcast, you can support us through our Patreon page, which is located at the same website. We look forward to bringing you additional episodes in the near future, but until then, happy dreaming.